which I remarked a short space above, that it makes no difference how many persons are acquainted with your uprightness. Those who wish their virtue to be advertised are not striving for virtue, but for renown. Are you not willing to be just without being renowned? Nay, indeed, you must often be just and be at the same time disgraced. And then, if you are wise, let ill repute, well won, be a delight. Farewell.
Letter 114. On Style as a Mirror of Character.
You have been asking me why, during certain periods, a degenerate style of speech comes to the fore, and how it is that men's wits have gone downhill into certain vices, in such a way that exposition at one time has taken on a kind of puffed-up strength, and at another has become mincing and modulated like the music of a concert piece. You wonder why sometimes bold ideas, bolder than one could believe, have been held in favor, and why at other times one meets with phrases that are disconnected and full of innuendo, into which one must read more meaning than was intended to meet the ear, or why there have been epochs which maintained the right to a shameless use of metaphor. For answer, here is a phrase which you are wont to notice in the popular speech, one which the Greeks have made into a proverb. Man's speech is just like his life. Exactly as each individual man's actions seem to speak, so people's style of speaking often reproduces the general character of the time, if the morale of the public has relaxed and has given itself over to effeminacy. Wantonness in speech is proof of public luxury, if it is popular and fashionable, and not confined to one or two individual instances. A man's ability cannot possibly be of one sort, and his soul of another. If his soul be wholesome, well-ordered, serious, and restrained, his ability also is sound and sober. Conversely, when the one degenerates, the other is also contaminated. Do you not see that if a man's soul has become sluggish, his limbs drag and his feet move indolently? If it is womanish, that one can detect the effeminacy by his very gait, that a keen and confident soul quickens the step, that madness in the soul, or anger, which resembles madness, hastens our bodily movements from walking to rushing? And how much more do you think that this affects one's ability, which is entirely interwoven with the soul, being molded thereby, obeying its commands, and deriving therefrom its laws? How Mycenas lived is too well known for present comment. We know how he walked, how effeminate he was, and how he desired to display himself. Also, how unwilling he was that his vices should escape notice. What then? Does not the looseness of his speech match his ungirt attire? Are his habits, his attendants, his house, his wife, any less clearly marked than his words? He would have been a man of great powers had he set himself to his task by a straight path, had he not shrunk from making himself understood, had he not been so loose in his style of speech also. You will therefore see that his eloquence was that of an intoxicated man, twisting, turning, unlimited in its slackness. What is more unbecoming than the words, a stream and a bank covered with long-tressed woods? And see how men plow the channel with boats and, turning up the shallows, leave gardens behind them. Or, he curls his lady locks and bills and coos and starts a sighing like a forest lord who offers prayers with down-bent neck. Or, an unregenerate crew, they search out people at feasts and assail households with the wine cup and, by hope, exact death. Or, a genius could hardly bear witness to his own festival. Or, threads of tiny tapers and crackling meal, mothers or wives clothing the hearth. Can you not at once imagine, on reading through these words, that this was the man who always paraded through the city with a flowing tunic? For even if he was discharging the absent emperor's duties, he was always in undress when they asked him for the countersign. Or that this was the man who, as judge on the bench, or as an orator, or at any public function, appeared with his cloak wrapped about his head, leaving only the ears exposed, like the millionaire's runaway slaves in the farce. Or that this was the man who,